If you have not been baptized, and this has been a year where you know you are connected with Jesus Christ, and maybe that's happened this past year, or maybe it's happened at some point in your life, but you've never made this public proclamation that Jesus asks us to make, where we go into a pool and you proclaim to the world that you are a follower of Jesus Christ. You have asked him to forgive your sins, and you are now longing to live a life led by his Spirit. This is what we do at water baptism, and if you have never had that happen to you as a believer in Jesus Christ, come and see me. There's still time. We can make this happen. Come up to me after the service. We'll talk it through. If it isn't something that's ready to happen, that's not a problem, but if it is something that's ready to happen, then we'll talk that through and make it an incredible day next week. I assure you, it will be unbelievable, and don't miss. You do not want to miss next Sunday at the Cooper House. Our baptism, like Mr. Roberts said, is the highlight of our year. We've been studying Jesus' Sermon on the Mount, and it really is a fascinating thing that he has done. 2,000 years ago, he addresses all these amazingly difficult situations in our life, and really the third major topic he brings up is divorce and remarriage. And he doesn't hold back. He teaches what it is, but I think what we find is that it's filled with hope. It's not something that condemns people. It's filled with hope. Because Israel had a problem where they were running kind of rampant with the idea of divorce and remarriage, and were actually practicing it very, very regularly. I don't know how it started, or how it all came about, who was the first one, but I know with each marriage, you come into it with a lot of enthusiasm and a lot of excitement, and then you find out along the way there's some work that's going to have to be done to keep this thing moving forward. We thought we'd show you what that looks like. Last week we began studying Jesus' teaching about divorce and remarriage from his Sermon on the Mount recorded in Matthew chapter 5. We unpacked verses 31 and 32, and we also looked at Jesus' continuing explanation of divorce and remarriage in Matthew chapter 19. We learned that the divorce and remarriage issue had afflicted Israel throughout the ages. As a matter of fact, it has afflicted all the ages. Moses tried to address the issue, Jesus addressed the issue, and the church today tries to address the issue. This issue, though, of divorce and remarriage is so volatile because it deals directly with the incredible power of love and the devastation that ensues when love is unrequited. It's no wonder that the Bible tells us God hates divorce. Well, as we unpacked Jesus' teaching, we found Jesus pointing back to the design and the wonder of marriage. He expounded on this passage that informs us that two people are made one in marriage, and that the bond between them is supernatural. This was very, very early in the Bible. Jesus seems to do this refocusing and pointing them back all the way to Genesis chapter 2 because Israel was looking past all those scriptures about how to build a healthy marriage. And instead, all they focused on, the only thing they put their attention to, was how to employ this loophole that Moses gave them, allowing divorce and remarriage. And they allowed that basically at will. This is what they had. This is what they were running on. Deuteronomy chapter 24, verses 1 and 2. The law of Moses said this: suppose a man marries a woman, but she does not please him. Having discovered something wrong with her, he writes her a letter of divorce, he hands it to her, and sends her away from his house. When she leaves his house, she is free to marry another man. Now keep your finger in that passage in Deuteronomy 24, because we're coming back to that. So after laying down all the theology last week on this subject, we then turned our attention to how to actually apply God's word to our lives. We looked at how, and we addressed one specific group. That was people who have been divorced. What does God want for these people who have been divorced? If you missed that, I would highly recommend that you go back to our website and watch that study or listen to that study, because what we said there from the Bible was something that all God followers need to understand on this subject matter. You will run across people in that category, and you need to have hope for them. Well, as for tonight, we are going to address two more groups and see how they are to live out what God wants and what Jesus said in Matthew chapter 5. That'll be those who are seeking divorce and those who are happily married or not seeking divorce. Now, allow me to say this from the very beginning, that one of the best pieces of marital counseling, one of the best pieces of marital counseling advice that I was ever given was given to me by a pastor named Lloyd Pulley. He said he always addresses each situation, every couple that comes to him, he always addresses each situation as an individual situation. Every situation has their own circumstances. And told me that God will direct differently. God will direct differently on what people are to do with a marriage that's strained to the max over finances compared to a marriage that is unsafe because one of the spouses is doling out escalating violence. Every case is different. If you apply a one-size-fits-all, you may very well be compounding the tragedy. With that said, the Bible gives us much advice on what we are to do here. Let's look at Jesus' words again in Matthew 19, because there's a key here for us. Jesus is talking about divorce and remarriage. And it says, Jesus replied, Moses permitted divorce only as a concession to your hard hearts, but it was not what God had originally intended. Jesus, gang, tells us the heart condition of those who were badgering Moses looking to get divorced. Jesus says they were hard-hearted. Now, when one is hard-hearted, it means that they're stubborn. It means that their mind is made up. They will not listen. The same was said of Pharaoh when he hardened his heart and would not listen to Moses about letting Israel go. Well, this is the heart condition, this hard-heartedness, this is the heart condition, Jesus says, that led to Deuteronomy 24, 1 and 2. So, for those seeking divorce, the first thing we need to check is our heart condition. We'll make that point one tonight. Check your heart condition. Is your heart stubborn? Is your mind made up? Are you willing to listen? And are you unwilling to try anything? If your answer is, my mind is made up, I stubbornly want this over, I won't listen, I won't try, then gang, get this. You have a bigger issue in your life than wanting divorce. Jesus says you have a hard heart. And that, gang, is not going to change by alleviating one problem in your life. What God is looking for is a heart that is willing to try it God's way. Looking for a heart that's willing to do whatever God says we are to do in His Word, and then do it. God wants us to have soft hearts in the arena of making a marriage work. I have seen people who believed that their marriage was over. But I have also seen them bring their marriage back to a strong, viable, healthy relationship when they were willing, with soft hearts, to try things God's way. Now, I will say emphatically that the majority of marriages that have come to me that I have seen can be fixed. I do not say that lightly, though, because saving a marriage means that the husband and the wife need to basically enroll in a school. You need to enroll in a school a school where they will teach both of them what they do not know. A school where the two, the husband and the wife, will train to become something other than they are at the moment. And a school where the two of them will work to gain a degree in marriage 101 that will define them for the rest of their lives. In this school, they will learn much. I would like to share quickly four things, just four learnings of the many that they would learn. I want to just share four with you tonight. The first thing in Marriage 101 is this: choosing to make difficult adjustments versus living with the status quo. Now, this comes directly from Family Life Marriage Conference. This is not mine. It doesn't take long, gang, in a marriage to see that we have differences, as we saw in the drama. It doesn't take long to see that we are unevenly matched. These differences may have been cute, and they may have been endearing once, but in time, they become sources of displeasure. And if we just stuff all those displeasures down and live with the status quo, if we just accept the status quo, well, then the oneness and the care in the marriage will start to erode. The first learning we must practice is that we're going to have to make difficult adjustments. I knew a man once. He was super close with his mother. Now, his mom and him had a great relationship, and his bride-to-be and him had a great relationship. Matter of fact, the bride-to-be loved the fact that her husband-to-be had a wonderfully close relationship with his mother. She loved that. But once they were married and time went on, it became very clear that the husband would constantly defer to the mother's opinion, not his wife's. He would defer to his mother's needs over his wife, and he would defer to his mother's wants over listening to his wife's opinions and her needs. Once the problem was put on the table and made clear, once they were shown that, a very, very difficult adjustment had to be made. The husband and the wife needed to learn to be a team. And not just a team, the team. You're the team. And the husband needed to know he had been traded to the team and he was no longer on his mom's team. This is why a man leaves his mother and father and cleaves to his wife. Gang, in every marriage, there will be difficult adjustments that must be made. And I'm not talking about little adjustments like, hey, I don't like the toilet paper coming out on the top. I like the toilet paper coming out on the bottom. So can you make sure that you always do it that way, because it drives me crazy? That's not the kind of adjustments I'm talking about. I'm not talking about even maybe a semi-adjustment, which is, hey, can you give me a call before you leave work? I'd like to know when you're going home. Yeah, I'll make that. And then making that. I'm not even talking about that. I'm talking about adjustments in areas of our life that are the most dear to us and are the most important to us, and often the most difficult for us to make those changes. But in Marriage 101, if you're going to fix a marriage, if you're going to have a marriage and stay happily married, you have to know, you have to make difficult adjustments and not just stuff things down living the status quo. The second learning: performance plan versus God's plan. Friends, our culture has adopted a plan for marriage that is based on 50-50 performance. You do your part, I'll do my part. I will act only if I can be assured that you will act. That is a plan based on merit. The motivation for our action is based on how one feels. Gang, the performance plan is destined to fail. It is destined to fail at achieving oneness. It fails because we tend to focus on, our mate's weaknesses, what they didn't do or their weaknesses. For if Kelly asked me to wash clothes, this has happened. She has discovered that that's one of my weaknesses. I will wash the clothes, but good luck getting what you expected out of that laundry. Because I'm telling you, what you will get is folded wet clothes. You will get clothes that have colors that have run on them. And you will get clothes that were probably supposed to be dry cleaned, shrunken down to the size of a doll's clothes. Gang, I'm not an idiot. I can build a fuel-injected motor and make it run. But I can't wash clothes. And if you're going to base your love for me on my laundry skills, which is my weakness, you won't love me very long. And in fact, you will be angry most of the time. You see, in the 50-50 performance plan, our mate's poor performance in areas that we feel are really important, that will erode our esteem and it will erode our admiration for each other. We have to choose God's plan, which is, I will give everything. I will give my life for you, not expecting anything back. Whatever I get, that's God's grace. Not, I'll only do as much as you do. The third thing, in marriage 101, choose between selfishness and selflessness. This is one I learned very, very early. Actually, before I was married, I've told this many times, I went in to see our premarital counseling pastor, and I had read the book, I'd done the chapter we had to do, and he says to me, okay, Drew, I want you to answer this question right here. Why do you want to marry Kelly? I'm glad you asked, Pastor. Let me tell you, and I had this written out, I'm a bit of a poet, so I'm like, well, I want to marry Kelly because she takes my black and white world and turns it to color. She takes every rainy day and turns it into sunshine. She makes every day a day of skipping through the roses, and I feel so good about being with her. I can't think of anything else I want to do in life but feel that good as she makes me feel. And he says, well, here's the deal. I can't marry you. What? You can't get better than that. He says, so everything you just told me that you have a big case of eye disease. I want. I feel good. I want to have my world better. I want to be happy. He says, that's not what we do in marriage. You will learn to be selfless in marriage, putting your wants and desires in the back burner and putting her wants and desires at the front. I want you to turn her world from black and white to color, no matter what it costs you. I want you to turn every rainy day to sunshine for her, not for you. We look at marriage as a vehicle to meet our needs, not a commitment to supply our mate's needs. And there's a major problem here. Men's needs are not the same as women's needs. Did you know that? Paul told us flat out. Ephesians chapter 5, verse 33. Here's what Paul told us. So I say, each man must love his wife as he loves himself. And the wife must respect the husband. That's two different words. Wives are looking to be loved. Men are looking to be respected. A woman craves companionship in love. She craves appreciation in love. She craves affection. Men, on the other hand, crave respect. They want to be recognized. They want to have recognition by their wife. They want to have an achievement in their life. And they want some form of esteem coming to them from their wife. The fourth thing that we want to look at in Marriage 101 is this: choosing between an affair and our mate. Now, let me explain this word, because it's not quite what you think. An affair is an escape from reality. It is a search for fulfillment outside of the marriage. You see, when oneness deteriorates, the husband and or the wife will look to fulfill their needs elsewhere. A wife will go and look for companionship elsewhere, because she's not getting that from her husband. She will look for appreciation and affection elsewhere. And men, well, they crave respect. They crave achievement. So they want to be esteemed. So there are different areas that they can escape to in an affair. There is the career affair, where you throw yourself into your job because that makes you feel like you're getting what you long for, that esteem. There's a materialism affair, where you just feel like you need, so you try to fill that void with things. There's an activities affair, where you throw yourself into your activities because that makes you feel better about yourself and you're getting the esteem that you want. There's the children affair, where one of the husband or the wife will throw themselves into the kids and receive all their love, receive all their esteem, everything from the kids. It's all about the love the kids are giving them. They're meeting the need that that spouse has that they're not getting from the other. And lastly, there is, of course, the love affair. Gang, many a marriage has wound up at the far end of the relationship spectrum where divorce lies, and they have arrived there by driving past. They drive past all the billboards encouraging them to enroll in Marriage School 101. If you are skeptical, allow me to prove my point tonight. I would like you to meet a Westbridge couple. A Westbridge couple who went from a marriage of two isolated people to a relationship of oneness. Would you welcome Jay and Ellen to the front? Thank you, guys. I wanted to start. Let's just let everybody know how the two of you met, right? By the way, this is my brother, Jay, okay? We've sung many a song together in the middle of the night from the time we were 2 to the time we were 20. And this is my sister-in-law, Ellen. Tell us, how did the two of you meet?
I met my wife at the ripe old age of 10 for the first time.
10 years old?
She was 4.
She was 4. Oh, you couldn't go on a date.
Right. There wasn't any attraction at that time. But we used to play softball on Thursday nights, and as time went on, I started to notice Ellen and fell in love with her.
Excellent. So you guys met when you were a kid. Did you have the same church affiliation? Is that what it was?
That's what it was. We met at church.
Excellent. Okay, so you met at, you were 10, she was 4. Obviously things, you just got to know each other, I guess, as friends throughout this time.
Correct.
And then got to a point where later in life, you said, I'm going to ask this girl for a date.
That's right.
Is that what happened?
That's what happened.
All right. Now, how long did the two of you date before you popped the big question?
I believe it was a year. 10 months.
10 months. 10 months. Good. Ellen knew exactly what it was. Jay, you probably clipped that right on there, and that's going to be even better. Clip it on top of your shirt, and it'll pick you right up. Ellen, what do you remember about the dating time, the 10 months of dating?
We had a great time. He would take me to go look for deer. You know, I entered his world.
Hunting. He loved hunting, right?
Loved hunting. Loved hunting. We played... oftentimes, actually, you were included. We did music at my house.
Yeah.
There were violins, guitars. We had a little country band kind of going.
Absolutely.
And Jay on his banjo. So we had a great time. We really did.
Sounds like things are really hunky-dory. Things are going great, right?
Absolutely.
And then you got married. Yeah. Well, tell me, what did your idea of marriage look like before you got married? Heading in, what did you think marriage was going to be like, Jay?
My idea was a fairy tale, watching Disney movies, seeing that the prince gets the princess, and they live happily ever after. which I did not come to realize till after I was married.
Okay, Ellen, what was your preconceived notions of what marriage would be like?
Everything Jay mentioned, plus I always felt that as Christians, we were both Christians. It's not like I was marrying an unbeliever. As right. Christians, we were just going to sail through a wonderful marriage. I just didn't think there would be any turmoil at all.
Excellent. Sal, you got married. Tell us about the first 2 weeks of marriage. Tell us that. Honeymoon, I guess that is, right, Jay?
Right. We got married in Union, New Jersey, and we were headed to Canada on a 2-week honeymoon. The first week went real well. The second week, I looked at Ellen and said, I want to go home.
What?
I want to go home. You talk too much.
Oh, my goodness. You actually wanted to cut your honeymoon short.
We did. We went to the travel agent and asked them about tickets, and they were outrageous price, so I said, I guess I have to stick it out.
Wow. And this is the first 2 weeks. Ellen, what were you thinking during the first 2 weeks?
The first week was really great, and then when he stepped into the travel agency in Jasper, Alberta, gorgeous, gorgeous area, I was thinking to myself, what did I do wrong? Like, what did I do wrong? Oh, no. So, you know, turmoil was starting already.
I see. So as this progressed, did it get better as the first year went by?
It did not.
It didn't get better. Stayed the same.
There were times that were good, but there was always times that were really bad.
Well, you must have had something that you were craving in the marriage. What were you not getting that you felt you needed? How about you, Ellen? What were you craving?
Yeah, I wanted to feel loved, and I wanted Jay to listen to me, and the things that were important to me, I would speak about, and he was totally distant. He was not engaged at all, would dismiss anything I brought up. It was just like very a laissez-faire attitude towards anything that was precious to me.
Wow. How about you, Jay? Was there anything you were craving in your marriage that you weren't getting?
Yeah, I think I had the attitude of a conqueror. I got the girl, and now I don't have to worry about her, and I just move on.
Weren't putting any effort into it?
No.
Oh, very cool. Ellen, do you have any examples of things that happened that would kind of paint a picture for us of what would kind of erode the oneness that you were looking for?
Yeah. There were a couple things that, it's really hard to think back 30 years ago. I was really trying hard, but there were a couple things that really stood out as being, oh wow, yeah, I remember that. I would give Jay the silent treatment for days on end when he wouldn't respond the way I did. So that just, it was like a vicious cycle. You know, he wouldn't do what I needed, and then I would throw him the silent treatment. I mean, sometimes, you know, I'd go to work, full-time job, and I'd take as much overtime as I could also. I'd come home, make dinner, but very little communication. It would just be, I'm just doing what I'm supposed to do. But, like, emotionally, neither of us were there. Neither of us were there.
How about you, Jay? Anything? Yeah, that you can describe?
My communication skills were nil. I was very bad at, I could talk to her while we were dating and then go home and be okay, but 24 hours a day communicating with my wife was very difficult for me. I don't think I even had the ability to do it. I didn't know how to do it.
Unbelievable. This is so, we had no idea. Thank you for sharing. This is 30 years ago?
That's 30 years ago. Well, 31
years ago. So take me back 30 years ago, Ellen. How did you feel in your relationship in your marriage, as far as getting companionship?
I had none from Jay. I really didn't. I faked it as best as I could in front of people at church, my family. I think Jay's family, too. I don't think you guys kind of knew this. You know, Joel and Dawn were friends at the time, too, and I think we faked it real well. We just were not enjoying being together.
How about appreciation? Did you feel appreciated?
No, I did not feel appreciated at all. I felt like whenever I tried to do something for Jay, it never met his standards. So it was like lost cause. So I would do stuff, but like I never heard anything positive back.
Yeah. How about you, Jay? Any comments about what she's saying? Does that make sense to you, what you were hearing?
Yeah, I think I was a jerk.
Whoa, okay, wow. I hear you. But, you know, there were things that you were needing in a relationship, too. How did you feel as a man in regards to the recognition you received receiving from your wife?
Yeah, I didn't feel I got the respect as the head of the home. I didn't feel like I made the last decision, or together we would make a decision and I would have the final word. But if that was right or wrong, that's the way I felt at the time. Mm-hmm. I think...
Did you feel esteemed, that Ellen really esteemed you as special?
I don't think she did, because I was hurting her so bad.
Oh, okay.
I don't think she esteemed me.
Ellen, any comments on that?
Yeah, Jay would use the catch-all phrase, you shouldn't feel that way. Whenever I told him how I was feeling early on, I would get that, you know, one little sentence. And after enough of that, what's the point of opening up and sharing and telling you how I feel when I got smacked down every time? So that, again, built the wall higher and higher. And I didn't make myself vulnerable anymore. Why? There was no point. I was always getting the same response. So, you know, it just kept, it was such a vicious cycle. It really was.
Before we get out of the valley, take me to the low point. Where were you at the low point in your marriage?
My lowest point, I'd say, is I just felt so miserable and hopeless. We took our marriage vows very seriously, so divorce was not an option for us. We just felt we were totally stuck. Like, there's no way out. Like, this is life, and it stinks.
Right.
We talked about even taking a ride one night, didn't
yes,
you?
Yes, I did. I was so distraught. Now, this is when I was living in Linden. I drove past where I worked in Murray Hill and kept going, and there's an overlook right before you get to 287. And I just went there for several hours and just cried my eyes out, thinking, marriage is not supposed to be like this. Like, what am I doing wrong? I don't know what's wrong, but it's not supposed to be this way. And again, you know, I kept thinking, he's a Christian, I'm a Christian. This is supposed to be fun. This is supposed to work. And it wasn't. It was not. Again, we took our marriage seriously, those vows, and I don't even know if we ever mentioned the word divorce. It just was not something we were going to go towards.
How about your low point, Jay? How close were you to that edge?
Pretty close. I remember taking a ride, too, but I only went 2 miles from the house.
You want to save gas?
That's it. And I just cried my eyes out when I went there. And I prayed and asked the Lord to show me what to do. I prayed for Ellen. I just didn't know what she needed from me. I didn't have the tools in my tool belt. And that's what I asked God for. Just give me direction.
And then, all of a sudden, light on the horizon. What happens? What was the first thing God sent into your world that started to bring a new sunrise?
One thing, just back up just a little bit. The church I was attending, I was a Sunday school teacher for, I don't know, second or third grade. And there were some things going on that I really didn't like in the Sunday school, and I resigned. And they asked Jay if he would consider teaching. And he said, yes, but not Ellen's class. Well, the next week, they gave him my class. And I was, livid doesn't even describe how angry I was. That he was devoted to church more than me. And I stopped going to that church, and he continued teaching for, I don't know, I'm trying to think back, maybe 4, 5, 6 weeks, somewhere in that time span. And I was attending another church, happened to be the church that Drew was going to. He had told us about it for months before. And I started attending there by myself. And then after he realized that it was not a good situation, he stopped going and then joined me in church, the church that Drew was going to. So that, I'd say, was the turning point, because we started in a, I think the first class we took, Sunday school class, was a marriage class. And I don't even know if Jen realizes this, but Jen O'Brien's father and mother-in-law, Dave and Judy O'Brien, were teaching that class. And I just could not believe that Jay and I weren't the only ones in a marriage that wasn't good. I thought we were the only ones. I felt very alone. I thought this was only happening to us, but it was a, had a whole bunch of couples in it. You know, everybody at different levels in marriage. Some had been married many years, some had just been newly married. But there were enough there that it made me feel like, oh, wow, there is hope. There is hope. So that was, for us, like, wow, it can get better. It doesn't have to be like this.
What was that awakening like for you, Jay? What did you see that you, I mean, you're an older guy, you should have seen everything by now. What were you seeing that you hadn't seen before?
Well, there was a couple in the class that were our mentors that taught me. The man sat me down by myself and looked at me and said, this is what Ellen needs from you, and you're not giving it to her. So he said to me, she needs to be heard by you. You have to listen to her. You need to cherish her, and you need to love her.
And you didn't know that?
I didn't know how to do it.
Oh, okay. Okay, how about you, Ellen? What were some of the new awakenings that you were learning right away in a class teaching marriage, in Marriage 101?
Back to Jen's father and mother, father and stepmom, he drew a triangle on the board and placed Christ on the top and then a spouse on the bottom left and the wife at the bottom right. And he said, if you're spending time with the Lord, you're moving closer to the Lord. And if your husband is also spending time with him, you're going to be closer together. So as you are closer to Christ together, it brings you guys closer together. And at this point, I had neglected my Bible reading and praying for, I don't know how long, probably, I don't know, months, I don't know, maybe a year, I don't know how long. I was just not in the Word, I wasn't praying. I was just so dead to everything. So this just blew my mind. You know, it was just a whole new idea of like, wow, this could be one of the reasons too that we're in such distress.
What were some of the difficult adjustments? We just talked about making difficult adjustments. Were there any difficult adjustments you had to make, Jay?
Yeah, I had to change some things. I'm a perfectionist, and I remember the one time, I think it was Ellen's birthday, she had a Chevy Monza, and I got a hold of some tires with chrome rims for them. And I put them on there, and she didn't know about it. And I parked it outside her parents' house and said, look what I got for you for, I think it was her birthday. Oh, she said, it's beautiful. Well, the first day she took it out, she curbed the tires, and I blew up. I thought that was the worst. She looked at me and said, you like them so much, take them back. I don't want them. And she was right. She was right. I mean, I gave the tires to her. She curbed the tires. That was it. You know, they're her tires. So I had to try to let go of that perfectionist in me that wanted everything just right.
Absolutely. How about you, Ellen? Any difficult adjustments you had to make?
I think the hardest thing for me was not giving Jay the silent treatment. That was so inbred in me that like I had to really force myself to communicate with him and not just cut him off and just, you know, go days on end without speaking to him. That was my hardest thing.
How about when we talked about dealing with each other's weaknesses? Do you have a weakness that you have to deal with and you're dealing with it a certain way? And maybe you see a weakness in your spouse? How do you deal with those? Ellen.
Jay has many strengths, he really does, and one of the ones that's most precious to me is his faithfulness to the Lord, to me, and to our children. That one just, I feel so secure in that his relationship with the Lord is so strong. And when I think of the strengths, I put that one on top. Now, as far as weaknesses go, Jay can be short on patience, and I think that's probably common in a lot of men. He's short on patience and he tends to be a perfectionist and gets stressed out when things aren't going exactly the way he wants them to go. When I know that Jay's in the middle of something important, whether it's working on the car or doing a repair around the house, I try to just leave him be. He's in his zone. I try not to interrupt him. Unless there's a phone call that's really important, I just try to put that buffer around him at that time because I know he can be short during those times. If I go approach him with something silly or stupid or, you know, something that doesn't need immediate attention. So I try to be sensitive to that in Jay.
And how about you, Jay? Is there anything that you see as one of Ellen's weaknesses that you have to learn to deal with in the right way?
Yeah, I'm going to start with a positive again. Ellen has many positive things too, and a couple of her strengths are she's an excellent mother to our two children. She's always available when anybody needs anything. Even if they're not part of our family, she's always available to help them. And she's also very good at multitasking, which I'm not good at. So the one weakness I can think of was Ellen tends to jump to conclusions before she gets all the facts from a certain situation or something that should happen.
How do you deal with that? How do you make that work without it being a problem?
I pray for her, and I try to listen and sympathize with the way she feels, and try to see if the situation warrants how she feels.
Excellent. So where's marriage out today? How long have you been married?
It'll be 31 years in October.
Woo! 31 years! What do you do to sustain and keep growing a healthy marriage?
Well, we weren't able to date a whole lot when we have our children, but now we make time to do dates. We did certain little dates, like once a month when we had children, and we'd get a babysitter. But now it's like we enjoy being together, and just even going out for lunch somewhere. It's something small, you know? We like to watch romantic movies together when the kids are out. And what else do we do? We share things that we read. If it's from the Bible or from another book that we're reading, if I think that Ellen would like, you know, to know this one fact or something I think that's interesting, I say, oh, Ellen, look what this guy said about this. And we've shared a lot of things like that together.
How about you, Ellen?
I think for me, being consistent with prayer and Bible reading, making it a priority to thank God for each day that I'm with Jay and that he's put us together. Also, whenever we have a disagreement or we've hurt one another, to choose to communicate. It's a choice. I mean, you don't have to, but to make that choice and do that instead of closing off communication and giving him silent treatment. This is something I still struggle with. It's easier to do for me, like struggling with that. Sometimes it's easier for me to write him something. We learned that in one of our marriage encounter weekends, to write a letter if it's something that you just can't do face to face. So I've used that as a tool. I just feel now, though, that we have tools that we can use. Before, we had none. We never had any premarital counseling. We had none, absolutely none. We didn't even know these books existed until that first class with Dave and Judy O'Brien, and we were just in awe that there's books, there's help out there. And one of my favorite quotes is from Ruth Graham Bell, and it says, "A happy marriage is the union of two good forgivers." We're going to be forgiven each other for the rest of our lives.
Well done.
So, yeah.
Well, thank you so much. Well done, guys. Thank you. Thank you. I'm going to make sure that you guys can take your seats. I'm going to make sure Jay and Ellen are back up here at the end of the service in case anybody wants to talk to them and try to get advice or see where it goes. One of my favorite quotes is something that Henry Cloud said, and I put it on the wall of my office, and it said, the main reason that people do not find healing in counseling is because they are unwilling to do what it takes to fix the problem. What we find is that there are answers to tough questions, but they're going to require us to do things that aren't easy and aren't who we're normally wired up to do and to be, because who we are normally wired up to be and what we've done to this point has gotten us to that point where we need help. We need to do those difficult things. I'm going to ask the worship team to come back and our worship leaders and kind of close out our night really thanking God for the information that he has available to us. When I was talking to Jay and Ellen about doing this interview, one of the things we kept coming back to was they were so short on really information. They just didn't know. And there's so much that God has given us to know, that counselors came to them and helped them with, and want to thank God for that. So if you're needing help, please come see myself or my brother Jay and Ellen, and we'll point you in the right direction. But I want to thank God that when we look at the whole idea of divorce and remarriage, and people who feel like the marriage isn't where it's supposed to be, or maybe the marriage is okay, but it can be better, God has given us so much to help us get to a good place. We want to thank him for that. So consider these things as we stand and worship our God together. Lord, thank you for allowing us to be here tonight, and I thank you for having Jesus speak these words to us that we can learn from. Lord, I pray that you'd help each of us to know what you originally intended and to long to live that. And Lord, show us how to do the things you are calling us to do, to make the difficult adjustments over sticking with the status quo. Help us to learn not to live in a performance plan where we only do if we know we're going to get. And Lord, help us to live lives that are selfless and not selfish. And Lord, let our love affair always be to our spouse and the one that you are saving us for. Lord, we leave ourselves in your hands, knowing it's the best place to be. Amen. Next week, we have one more group, the unmarried. You will find that very interesting. So please be with us next week at 7 o'clock, and we'll see you then.